Live and local
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3.
Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic
and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Bigby Williams shot rattles out. The play is a fake. Baseline shot, turns it down, goes to Winston for a three. First eight of the game to the Spartans.
The ability, the open floor. Big Ten play of the year with a little early nylon.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We have a jam-packed Friday edition of the Rap Game with RP3 for you today. Third hour, Tyler Nunez from Tiger Rag is going to help us break down all these decisions by these LSU basketball players about declaring for the NBA draft. And then he's also going to make sure to tell you why you shouldn't be freaking out about it. Also in the third hour, our boy Barry, Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine, helping us start previewing the NFL draft, which, by the way, is 2 weeks from yesterday. That's right. NFL draft is only less than 2 weeks away. It crept up on us. It's already here. Barry's going to help us get prepared for the NFL draft. Second hour, Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser. State softball playoffs have kicked off. Baseball playoffs kick off next week. Eric's going to help us get prepared for that. And a very special guest to start off the second hour, Lafayette's own Dustin Poirier, who is fighting in the UFC main event on Saturday in Atlanta for the lightweight division championship belt. Plus my rant of the week, RPOs with RP3, which Cody assures me is going to be brilliant. Or that could have been a lie, I'm not for sure. And of course, the Masters. But we're going to start off with LSU basketball drama somewhat coming to an end, hopefully coming to an end. Reports came out yesterday from multiple media outlets that Will Wade, embattled, suspended, second-year head coach of the LSU men's basketball program, is going to be meeting with LSU officials today on Friday for the first time since the suspension amid the wiretap saga. Now, this is happening. It's finally getting to the point where it's happening. He's ending his silence. Once again, it's going to be Wade. I would assume his attorney is going to meet with LSU and NCAA officials. This will break a 34-day stalemate between the two sides. Remember, the reason why Will Wade was indefinitely suspended by the university was not because of the Yahoo report and then later the ESPN report about the wiretap conversations had between Will Wade and convicted felon, wannabe agent, shoe company middleman, Christian Dawkins. The reason why he got suspended is because he refused to talk to them about the situation. Now, Will Wade's camp have leaked out the information that the reason why they did that is because based on the advice of the attorney, especially since Will Wade has been subpoenaed to appear in court to testify on April 22nd. Now, things have thawed between the two sides because Will Wade changed attorneys. He is a big, high-profile attorney now out of Chicago who's been working behind the scenes to get the two sides to talk. So that is where we're at now. The school did confirm that a meeting is taking place today. But also reports have come out that don't expect this to all of a sudden happen today, that they'll meet today and then they'll all come out and they'll have their arms around each other and, you know, they'll come out and they'll be like, oh, it's great to be together again. Remember how long the Javonte Smart thing occurred when it was LSU, Javonte Smart's parents, his family in the NCAA, when they held him out? And, you know, held him out of the regular season finale against Vanderbilt. And then we didn't find out, or he didn't find out, that he could be cleared to play in the SEC tournament until 2 hours before tip there in Nashville that Friday morning. So that was roughly a week of discussions happening behind the scenes, research being done behind the scenes. Many folks around the program that cover the program say expect a similar situation, possibly one that will even take even longer. But it is a step in the right direction. Does this mean that Will Wade will continue being the head men's basketball coach of LSU? I don't know. Does this mean that he'll actually, in this meeting, say something? I don't know either. There's so many different scenarios of how this could play out. Will Wade could sit there and meet with the NCAA and LSU, tell those entities exactly what occurred that led to those wiretap conversations. The NCAA and LSU could say, okay, well, nothing was violated. Or they could say, well, you know what? This is a gray area, and you're going to be suspended. There's so many different ways that this could go down, but it does look like we're finally getting to the point where the ball can at least start to get rolling for a resolution, whether that's Will Wade being the head coach or not. Once again, this will be the first face-to-face meeting for the two sides in a month, over a month. It was exactly 5 weeks ago that Wade was suspended for declining to speak with his superiors about an FBI wiretap on which he talks about, quote, a strong-ass offer with a recruiting middleman. Speculation led to that strong-ass offer being for Javonte Smart, because on that wiretap conversation, there's the Smart thing. Javonte just wrapped up his freshman season there at LSU. He is the former Scotlandville Magnet star. This is what Senior Associate Athletic Director Robert Munson confirmed to the Baton Rouge Advocate yesterday about the meeting being scheduled, but no time was specified. Quote, I can confirm there's a meeting scheduled with Coach Wade, LSU officials, and the NCAA within the parameters LSU first requested in early March. Further, quote, university officials have made clear their expectation for full cooperation and transparency in the first step in a process towards resolution. That's some strong language there in a statement. You see how the university's already drawn their line in the sand? They're letting you know that this is the meeting, and the parameters of this meeting is the same parameters they had back in March when they wanted the meeting to begin with that led them to the suspension of Wade for being insubordinate, for not meeting with his superiors to discuss an issue. The other line that I find interesting, university officials have made clear their expectation for full cooperation and transparency. So that's letting you know right now that LSU is expecting Will Wade to come and deliver the goods and not be cagey and not try to be evasive with their questioning. Because if he's any of those things, regardless of what the NCAA thinks, and I've told this to people from jump, they can fire Will Wade. There may be lawsuits afterwards. There may be a settlement of some kind, but they can fire Will Wade. Just like if you were working at any other job, just because you're a basketball coach doesn't mean that you have any more power or any more right than, say, someone that's flipping burgers or rolling out pizza dough or running parts for a living. That's why I think Will Wade got bad advice from his original legal counsel. He's since changed said legal counsel, and now all of a sudden this hotshot, big-time attorney when it comes for dealing with the NCAA based out of Chicago, all of a sudden this cat's like, nah, you're going to talk to the school. So we'll see. We'll see if this is going to change anything. The timing of this meeting is also critical for another. This has another layer to it. Because the spring signing period starts Wednesday. Coaches were able nationally to, again, start meeting with potential recruits yesterday, on Thursday, following a one-week quiet period for the Final Four. And why is that important? Well, because apparently any person that is wearing purple and gold that remotely got close to the hardwood there inside the PMAC has now declared for the NBA draft. First, it was Naz Reid. Then it was Tremont Waters. We expected both of those last week. Naz was the first. He's a projected first-round pick. Tremont Waters flirted with the NBA last year, decided to come back. He's not projected to be a first-round or second-round pick, but he's a guy that could probably make it in the league. Then on Friday, Skylar Mays makes his decision on social media that he's declaring for the NBA draft. And you're like, well, damn. So you got three players, three starters that are now saying, peace, we're out. We're declared for the NBA draft. You have the interim coach who filled in for Will Wade during the suspension, Tony Benford, who's been linked to taking an assistant coaching job with Buzz Williams, his good friend, at Texas A&M. And then, yesterday, you had Javonte Smart declare for the NBA draft, the freshman who's mentioned in the wiretap conversation, or allegedly mentioned or referred to in the wiretap conversations. And then Emmett Williams is like, hold on, man. I don't want to get left out. Emmett Williams, who was a part-time starter and bench player, he's declared for the NBA draft. So, right now, whenever LSU and Will Wade meet today, the team that won the first Southeastern Conference regular season title in a decade and advanced to the NCAA's tournament Sweet 16 for the first time since 2006... five players have declared for the draft from this team. The other leader from this year's team, Cavell Bigby Williams, he's graduating. So essentially, as of right now, if all those guys decide not to come back, it will be Marlon Taylor and a bunch of other guys.
Can Marlon Taylor throw the ball up to himself?
I'm waiting for him to declare. I mean, Emmett Williams was surprising to me. Now, once again, the reason why we're going to have Tyler Nunez on in the third hour, he's going to break this down a little bit further. Just because these cats are declaring does not mean that they are going to be going. There's the new rule where you can declare for the draft. You can even go through the combine process. You can get some positive or negative feedback from NBA franchises, and then you can seriously gauge whether or not you want to risk declaring for the draft, keeping your name in the draft pool. There's a deadline for that. There's a date for that. You can go through this process, and then you can simply come back to school. I would expect guys like Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, and Emmett Williams to come back to school. Okay? That's my honest opinion. But with your coach still being indefinitely suspended, your interim coach looking like he's going to be taking an assistant job somewhere else in the SEC, these guys are like, hey, we might as well declare for the draft and see what we can do because we have no idea what the hell's going on with our program and our team. Because LSU and Will Wade have not been able to put their BS aside and actually meet and hash things out and figure out what the direction this program is going to be, especially now with the period coming up on Wednesday with visiting with recruits.
Black helicopters, this is all sort of a backhanded strike by LSU basketball players. They want Will Wade back. They're all declaring for the draft. As soon as Will Wade's hired or unsuspended, they'll all withdraw their names and be back at LSU.
I don't think they love Will Wade that much. Just to be honest with you, I think he's their coach. Their mentality during interviewing them and talking to them during the SEC tournament week, they're very much like, whoever our coach is, whoever our coach is. Okay? I think it's more of, hey, university, get y'all's act together. If this guy's going to be our coach, great. We can move forward. If this cat's not going to be our coach, that's okay too. Make a decision.
Right.
I think it's more about that and more about them saying, hey, we just came off a Sweet 16 run. We could do something good again next year if y'all get y'all's act together and let us know what the hell you're doing. That's what I think it's more about for me. But I do think these guys are having conversations with one another and going, oh, hey, man, won't you declare? Yeah, let's all do this. Like, I think that conversation has been had.
And don't hold your breath, team, on LSU figuring this out quickly and swiftly.
No, no. The LSU players, to either complete their eligibility, Cavell Bigby Williams, or declare for the draft, Nasri, Tremont Waters, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart. This was before Emmett Williams made his announcement. Courtesy of our friend Jarrett Rozier, accounted for the following last season. 69% of the minutes, 70% of the points, 60% of the rebounds, 86% of the assists, 72% of the blocks, and 79% of the steals. And that was before Emmett Williams made his decision to declare as well. It's a lot of firepower that you have to replace. Most of that will come back if LSU can get it together and make a decision on what to do with Will Wade or what not to do. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we've got a very special announcement involving myself and the one and only Cody Schutz. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schutz, you and I have been doing this show together since late October, right? It was the last week in October.
Yeah.
When
Halloween week.
It was Halloween week that the Rap Game debuted.
Correct.
In the spot of the formerly Alan Michael show.
Right.
With the late, great Alan Michael. I'm sorry, no, he's not.
Oh, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Alan Michael, by the way, is living fine in Pittsburgh.
Somewhere, Clint is screaming he's not dead. I know that. If you listen to the 20 by 20, you get that reference.
So, my journey here with the station began, ironically, at a UL spring game, Cody. I don't know if you know this. It was UL spring game.
Yeah, Clint told me the story. Yeah.
And me and Clint struck up a conversation. I was covering it for The Advocate. And he's like, hey, man, do you want to come on my show? And I don't even think you were there on that producer show that he had me come on the next week.
Probably not.
And I was like, sure. And then I guess Ben heard that, and he's like, okay, you got to get Raymond on my show. And then I started doing guest spots on Ben Love's Bumper to Bumper Sports for, I don't know, a year or so, whatever. And then the station started asking me, hey, we like what you do as a guest. Can you come on and serve as a guest host? And the first time, I think, was for Uncle Jordy. I did a couple spots for Jordy Holberg. I think
you are building this up so much right now. It is hilarious.
And then I did this. I did. I filled in for Sports Chat a couple times. And then when Alan Michael left, they were like, you know what would be great? If we can get another balding, bearded, slightly overweight white man to do a show from 9 to 11.
I only check like one of those boxes.
I check them all.
Yeah.
I check them all.
That's why you get to sit at that desk.
So you and I have had a tremendous time. We had our little 9-11 spot. The last month, we have filled, well, the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks, yeah, we have filled in on the morning show spot. So today we have an announcement that Acadiana, you are going to be stuck with me and Cody. I know some of you via Twitter are not thrilled about this decision.
You built this up as if, like I don't even know what, like, announcement could have. As, okay, guys, we built an ark. It's right out back here in the studio. Grab two of every bloody animal and meet us over there.
You're stuck with me and Cody. The decision has been made that myself, RP3, Raymond Parks III, and Cody Schutz will continue be broadcasting here from 6 to 9, Monday through Friday. But the show will debut a new show on Monday called RP3 and Company. It's essentially the same show, just with a little rebranding.
That's it.
It took the same bits.
It took you 8 minutes to say that.
Well, we did have this segment.
You said it
to
real.
Fill. You we
said
had
it,
this segment to fill.
You said it real party, though. I ain't gonna lie. You said it real party.
Party. My man just said party.
But yes, nothing's really changing. It's just a new little brand of the show. I think we're gonna like it. I think. But
we're making some tweaks, some improvements.
Yes.
To better serve you, the listeners of Acadiana.
So what we're saying is essentially enjoy today's last ever edition of Rap Game with RP3.
That's correct.
As we move after the weekend to RP3 and Company.
That is correct.
Again, I have a lot to do today whenever this show is over.
As you expressed in the commercial break.
Yes.
You're like, damn.
It is nary 6:30 yet, and I need it to be later today already.
So, yes, this is the last edition of Rap Game with RP3. New show with the same host,
right,
the same producer, and a lot of the same gimmicks. We'll debut on Monday with RP3 and Company. That's our special announcement. When we come back.
Tim, you can calm down now, buddy. It's all right.
And when we come back here on 103.7 The Game, we'll check in with the Masters. That's right. Some big movers and shakers yesterday in the first round there from Augusta. We'll dive right into it after this break. It's your host of Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III. It's that time of the show here on 103.7 The Game that we talk to you about azaleas in bloom, pimento cheese sandwiches for $1.50, and every media member on the face of the planet trying to make you believe that Tiger Woods will win this glorious golf tournament where he, in fact, will finish outside of the top 10. I could do that the whole segment, but I
wanted to do pull up a seat, friends, and grab a cold drink out of the fizzy bin and enjoy another Perks of the Game.
I do love that intro.
I think it's Barry Rosehaus or something like that did it. I forget exactly who Perks says did it, but he nailed it. I mean, it's like 2.5 minutes of pure Jim Nance magic.
It is pure magic.
Hello, friends.
First round of the Masters is in the books.
Before you get started with official Master, speaking of Jim Nance, he was on with Dan Patrick yesterday, I believe it was. Either Patrick or Rome. I believe it was Dan Patrick.
Okay.
And Dan Patrick asked him a very interesting question that I was – because Jim Nance is an icon, a legend of sports commentating.
Yes, Final Fours, the Masters,
right.
Super Bowls.
That's exactly where I'm going. Final Four, Masters, Super Bowl, all these big events. He asked him, what would he want to retire on? When Jim Nance hangs it up, Nance says he has no plans of retiring anytime soon or anything, But when he does decide to hang it up, what would he want his final event to be that he called? And he said, without hesitation, no doubt, the Masters.
Yeah.
So that just shows you not only how big of an event this is for the golfers, but for everyone, or at least Jim Nantz as well, involved in it.
It's on my bucket list to go to a Masters, but as someone who...
I just want a pimento cheese sandwich.
Well, first of all, hell yes. second of all, as much as I'd like to go to the Masters, it's on the bucket list. I played golf in high school, not well. We've established this on this program.
Mm-hmm.
And I play it terribly. But for me, I'm going to the Open Championship in England or Ireland or Scotland. That would be right. More. If you had to say, you can go to, let's say, Raymond, you can go to the Open at St. Andrews or the Masters, I'm picking St. Andrews. That's just me. I know a lot of people would pick the Masters, but I would pick the older tournament.
Is it just because of the golf, or is it because of the fact that you would also be
Europe?
Overseas, yeah, across. So that, yeah, there's other factors.
There's other
weighing
factors.
In. That's fair, though. That's absolutely fair.
You know, for me, it would be St. Andrews.
Pretty in Pink and St. Elmo's Fire.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I love that. St. Andrews. And then I think even before the Masters, if I had the opportunity to go and cover a golf tournament at Pebble Beach, I think it's those two and then Augusta for the Masters. But first round in the books, but I'm not surprised by Jim Nantz because he absolutely adores doing that tournament.
That surprised me because I guess I don't know enough about it. So
he's more of a golf guy, though. Yeah. You know, a lot of people on first class, you'd be the Super Bowl. Not for Nantz. I think that would be third on his list, even if that. I think he loves doing the March Madness, but I think the Masters, that's the thing that he looks forward to year in, year out. So, first round in the books, and Cody, your Masters Challenge selection, the 2019 Masters Challenge, where you can win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com through the 1037thegame.com. You picked Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, yeah.
Two under, first round.
Hey, that's not bad. With the leaders just what, under six? Six under, right?
Yeah, he's four strokes back.
So that's, hey, I'll take that all day.
Tiger Woods tied for 11th at two under. He missed some putts early, then he made some punts, and then he's inconsistent, as he's been since he's in the last 5 to 6, 7 years. He
sounded like Steve Spurrier. Yeah, we're going to throw it a little bit. We're running a little bit. We'll play some football.
He's right there. Ricky Fowler is right there with him at two under as well. So is Jason Day. So you got some big names right there tied for 11th. There's only, let's see. Oh, there's only 10 guys tied for 11th.
That's all. No way. Where is our boy of Fleetwood Mac fame?
He's right behind them, one stroke back at one under. He did not have a good day.
But we're both still in it.
Tied for 21st. In that next pairing. Your leaderboard, though, woo! Guns out, Brooks Koepka.
You say guns out again, I'm thinking Shooter McGavin. You have to stop this.
I'm not for sure if Brooks Koepka is just that ripped and takes care of himself, or if he's just the type of dude back in the day that would wear a shirt one size too small to make his muscles look bigger.
They don't make a smaller shirt. We checked.
Yeah. You know, the type of guy that would sit there and flex while checking the time on his watch when you asked him what time it was. And have be like, seen, dude, we get it. You work out. It's cool.
It's PC Principal from South Park.
Yes, exactly. That's who kind of reminds me. He's tied for the lead with Bryson DeChambeau. They're both at six under. After the first round, right there behind them in third place, only one stroke back, is lefty. Phil Mickelson.
Come on.
Is right there. He had a tremendous day on the course, only five under. Then who I call Poulter Pants, Ian Poulter, because he wears those ridiculous pants. The Englishman tied for fourth as well with Dustin Johnson, DJ, who is also another one of the favorites. They're both at four under. Adam Scott, previous Masters winner, three under, tied for six. and John Rahm, the Spaniard with the German name. When I first started hearing about him, I was like, oh, he's one of my people. And then no, they're like, no, he's a Spaniard. I was like, well, I don't know what the hell happened there. John Rahm is tied for third. He's in the hunt as well after the first day. Like I said, Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, all these guys, even my boy Tommy Fleetwood, they're all there in the mix. Where, oh, where, do you ask, is the guy who was the odds-on favorite to win the whole thing? Rory McIlroy. I'm glad you asked. He's tied for 44th. One over on the first round of the Masters. That is going to be the tournament for him. I didn't have a chance to get into this with Perksy on Tuesday's show. But the next time I'm going to talk to Craig, I'm going to be like, the Masters may just be the tournament that Rory just is always going to be out of his grasp, like Greg Norman. Rory had a beautiful chance to win the green jacket, let it slip through his hands, and he did not look good yesterday. Now, it's not impossible. He's in a group there tied for 44 with defending Masters champion and the PGA Tour's main villain, Patrick Reed, Baton Rouge native. At plus one, Sergio Garcia, plus one as well. Bubba Watson's tied for 29th at even par. So, look, still a ton of golf left to go on the day. They'll be teeing off here shortly over there on East Coast time, getting the second round in. You'll see some movement again today. But Brooks Koepka, I mean, this is a guy that's won, what, three of the past six majors? He doesn't win any other tournaments. He just comes and wins the majors. He has his little shirt on, goes out there, and muscles his way to victory. And I don't know. It will be interesting to see what happens over the weekend. Jordan Spieth struggled. I have no idea what has happened to Jordan's game, but he had one of the worst days on the course in a long time. He has not been right for a couple of years now. And this is a guy who's won the green jacket, kind of broke through. He's tied for 63 at plus three. He's right there with Justin Rose, who a lot of people thought, Justin Rose, who's the number one player in the world right now, is plus three after the first day. So, be interesting to see if Rose and Spieth even make the cut for this weekend's rest of the tournament. How do you feel about your pick, though, Cody, moving forward?
Extremely happy. There's no reason to not be excited about Tiger Woods. I'm on PGAtour.com right now looking for something for RPOs a little later on in the show.
Ooh.
So I just needed a statistic, if you will.
Oh, I like that.
And while looking at that, I stumbled upon the top 10 win probabilities for this Masters after day one. And, of course, it's what you would expect. Bryson DeChambeau has a 17% chance of winning. But I look down, my guy, Tiger Woods, tied for 11th, has a 3.3% chance of winning, which is good for 7th place on this PGAtour.com list. So I have no complaints. And besides,
he's a top 10 player. I just don't know if he can win majors.
The thing is, I don't know that either. I don't know. And I'm not going to sit here and try to break down Tiger Woods' golf game. I don't know golf well enough to attempt to do that. What I can say, though, is that I've seen enough of Tiger Woods to know that if he wakes up on Sunday morning and he can put on that red shirt and he can get out on the course and he's within a handful of strokes, I might actually tune into that final round of the Masters.
I'll be tuning in regardless, but I get what you're saying. He's box office.
I can't sit here with any amount of certainty and say, no matter what, I will be tuned into the Masters on Sunday. I can't, you know, maybe I will, but I can't say that. If Tiger Woods is within three or four strokes, you bet your bottom dollar I'm watching.
Exactamundo.
So,
interesting fact, Tiger Woods has never won a major where he has not been the leader. heading into the final
going
round.
Going into Sunday, okay. See, that is a fun, that's a fun fact.
He's a front runner. Always has been. Even when he was dominant, he was a front runner. Unlike Jack Nicklaus, who back in the day could make a charge on a Saturday or a Sunday and overtake a leader, Tiger's never won a major when he's trailing into the final round.
And for sake's sake, Brooks Koepka, who you were talking about, is third on this probability list at 12%. DJ Dustin Johnson is second. Phil Mickelson coming in at fifth with almost 5% chance. So,
the person that people are going to root for, here's the other thing you mentioned, if Tiger's in contention, if Lefty's there and has another chance to win another major at the place where he finally broke through and won his first years ago, that'll be box office too. So, yeah, if you're the Masters and you're CBS, you're like,
can we get Phil and Tiger in a 37-hole playoff?
Yes. Tiger in contention. Yes. Phil. Yes, the man who wears a shirt too small. Yes. Yes. So,
Jason Day, number 10 on that list.
There's still a lot of heavy hitters, a lot of big names right there. Friday will come and go. Saturday is always moving day at the Masters. That's when guys will make their charge, and that's where you'll see guys fall back. So we'll see. Still plenty of golf to go, but an interesting start with a lot of big names here for this year's Masters. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this first hour of the Wrap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Started off the show talking about the LSU hoops drama that Will Wade embattled and definitely suspended coach of the men's basketball team and LSU and the NCAA. They're going to be meeting today, having their first face-to-face meeting in more than a month. This is also while the period to start talking to recruits begins next Wednesday. Also while now five LSU players have declared for the NBA draft, with Naz Reid, Tremont Waters, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, and now Emmett Williams. We also made the special announcement that you will continue having yours truly, RP3, and Cody Schutz on the airwaves here from 6 to 9 every weekday morning, as we will permanently be in this spot starting next week with a new show name and some new show gimmicks. RP3 and Company will make its debut on Monday. We looked at the Masters leaderboard as well. Talked about Brooks Koepka and others that are in contention, while Justin Rose and Jordan Spieth appear to be out of contention and possibly missing the cut. But now we're going to wrap up this final hour talking a little Raging Cajuns. The university and the athletic department made the announcement yesterday afternoon that the Raging Cajuns football team annual spring game has been moved indoors on Saturday due to the treacherous weather that is projected to come through Acadiana on Saturday. So UL's annual vermilion and white spring game will kick off at noon on Saturday inside the Leon Monclaw indoor practice facility there on campus. That's because the anticipated weather conditions in the area are forcing the move indoors from Cajun Field. Fans will receive an up-close look at head coach Billy Napier's 2019 squad and also have the ability to watch the action on ESPN+. Reminder that the free event has a charitable initiative behind it, with the Raging Cajuns conducting a non-perishable food item drive, which will benefit Campus Cupboard. Fans can also drop donations at entry points to the indoor facility. General admission parking is free and is available at the standard locations along West Congress Street and Cajun Dome Boulevard. So the indoor game for the Raging Cajuns will now be inside the Monclaw instead at Cajun Field. because of the bad weather projected to come through. So far, no announcement about UL baseball changing anything. We do know that the Cajuns are going to be at home this weekend versus South Owl. Tonight, they'll get things started at 6:30 p.m. when the Jaguars come to the Teague. A needed series win for the Raging Cajuns baseball team. Now, Saturday's game is projected to be at 4 and Sunday at 1 o'clock, but that could change today due to the forecast possibly forcing a doubleheader to be played either on a doubleheader to be played Sunday or possibly play Saturday's game early. But the weekend rotation was set yesterday for the Raging Cajuns baseball team. Austin Perrin will get the start on Friday. Brandon Young will be on the bump for the Raging Cajuns on Saturday. And Jack Burke will be the Sunday starter. Big series for the Raging Cajuns, especially considering that they dropped both of their midweek contests this week, getting routed by Louisiana Tech on Tuesday and then losing a closer game, but nonetheless another loss to McNeese State Wednesday night. So they'll have to play far better this time around this weekend. They need this weekend series. The Wally Poniff Classic is Tuesday there at the Shrine on Airline in Metairie when they take on LSU. And you're going to want to have some momentum heading into that game because after that game, there's only one midweek non-conference game left on the schedule for the Raging Cajuns because after the Wally Poniff next Tuesday, it's going to be at UT Arlington for a three-game stand. They have their last non-conference game, the midweek game, at Southern Miss, and then it's versus Texas State, versus Coastal Carolina, versus Georgia State, and then versus ULM to close it out before the conference tournament. So, a lot going on this weekend here on campus. The softball team is on the road in Boone, North Carolina, taking on App State, but if you want to show your Raging Cajun pride, you can go check out the baseball team. They have a three-game set against South Alabama. And, of course, the spring game. Your last chance to see the 2019 team during the spring, Saturday, instead of Cajun Field, once again, it'll be inside the Monclaw, noon, free game. Go check out Billy Napier and his squad. That'll do it for the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3. Coming up, leading off the second hour, our interview with Dustin.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is a 10-year pro in the mixed martial arts scene, a powerful southpaw who's compiled a record of 24-5-0. He started off right here in Acadiana. The Lafayette native was a star wrestler at Northside High School before getting into the octagon. This Saturday in Atlanta, he will take on Max Holloway for the interim lightweight belt at UFC 236. It's our great privilege to welcome on Dustin Poirier to the Rap Game with RP3. Dustin, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing good, man, out here in Atlanta, living the fight life.
I hear that, man. I hear that. I know it's a crazy week for you.
and a crazy couple days leading up into Saturday's main fight. Let's just start there, man. It's been a long road to this point, 10-year pro, and you get a chance to leave the ring Saturday night with some much-deserved hardware. How does it feel right now to be at this point in your career?
It feels deserved. You know, after all the work I've put in and the fights that I've come back from, the fights that I've won, my latest streak of a world champion, 3 in a row, it just feels very, very right, you know.
You said, you know, it feels right. I know last year, your last fight, obviously you TKO'd Eddie Alvarez back in July of last year. You were supposed to fight again, I want to say, in November. You had a little bit of a hip issue. How are you feeling right now, brother? Are you fully healthy again?
Yeah, I'm back to 100%. I feel great. I'm primed and ready, man. Saturday night, I become the world champion.
There it is. I love the confidence. I love the confidence. What made you fall in love with combat sports, man?
Just the purity of two men, one-on-one, finding out who's the best, who wants it more, who's worked harder, whose skill set is greater. You know, you have nobody to point the finger at. You have no team. Everything's on your back. And I like how pure that is and how hard that is to do.
Tell me a little bit, Dustin, about when you made the decided to make the move to Florida and with the training and everything, and that's where you live now full-time, correct?
I moved in 2012 from Louisiana, from Lafayette to Florida. I'm back now. I live in Lafayette now.
Okay. So you're back in Lafayette now. Okay, perfect. Oh, well.
Yeah. I live in Youngsville. Yeah.
Okay. So you're back. You know, a lot of people are really hyped up about this fight back home right here in Louisiana. What does it mean for you to be able to represent not only your city but also your state on a national stage, brother?
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana. I was born and raised, and moved there. Moved back there. After I left for a little while, my daughter's being raised there. I am, you know, Louisiana. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I love the community. I love the sense of community there. It means everything to me. I can't wait to walk through the airport on Sunday with that belt. I'm flying into Lafayette at 1 o'clock. I'll be home early on Sunday with that strap.
I love it. You're letting everyone know what time you're going to be flying back home, man. I love that. You're going to have a bit of a crowd there at the airport. I hope they can handle that.
It's a small airport, man. I don't think it can hold 20 feet.
World with Dustin Poirier. He's fighting for the UFC lightweight belt Saturday night in Atlanta. Dustin, you've already fought Max once before, you know, what lessons can you take from that fight that you can apply here, or are you going to approach it differently? And is he a different fighter, in your opinion?
We fought over 7 years ago. He's a completely different fighter, as am I. This is a completely different fight. I don't even watch that fight. I can't take anything from it. You know, he's a defending reigning world champion. That was his first fight in the UFC when I fought him 7 years ago. So this is a different fight. You know, we trained accordingly.
Dustin, elaborate a little bit on that. Is that the key to continue having a successful career, is continually adapting and changing how you do things and putting new wrinkles into your fight game?
I mean, you have to. At this level in the UFC, to stay on the top of the division for 7 years, you have to, or you wouldn't be there. You know, guys don't even have 7 year careers fighting in the UFC. So to be there at the top of the division says a lot. And then you have to evolve. You know, you have to grow with the times and learn from your mistakes and learn from your things you do correct as well. You just got to keep improving.
Dustin, right now you're 30 years old, brother, so you're still in your prime. But how many more great years of high-level competition do you still feel you have in the tank, man?
I feel like I'm entering my prime right now. The next few years are going to be the prime, and I think I have another solid 3 years of prime. I have a timeline of 35. I'll be done fighting by 35.
Oh, so you've already come up with your own plan on what your trajectory will be for your career in mixed martial arts.
I mean, that's just a rough plan. At 35, I'm thinking it's the age I might get out. I've been doing it since I was 18. I had my first fight since I was 18. You know, so this is going to be my 40th fight on Saturday night. And we'll see. When I hit 35, I might still be feeling great, and then we push it back a little bit. But right now, a loose number in my head is 35.
I got you, brother. I got you. Well, look, man, before I let you go out of here, and I know you're going to be swamped the rest of the day, but I do want to talk about your charitable work. I know early in your career you helped out Second Harvest Food Bank, and now you and your wife, you guys created a few years ago the Good Fight Foundation, and you do a great thing where you, you know, raffle off or auction off your fight kits to help raise money. Where did the inspiration come from for you and your wife to create this foundation, and what is the sole purpose of the foundation?
To help out as many, to fight the good fight. That's the sole purpose. That's the name of the fight, the good fight. That's the name of the foundation, the good fight. And we just want to help Acadiana. Everything we've done has been local. It's been our immediate community in Lafayette. This next fight here, Saturday night, I'll be auctioning off everything. And we're going to get a playground built for disabled children at Prairie Elementary School in Lafayette, Louisiana. You know, every goal is different. We don't have one thing we stick to, but we always try to do something that's close to our heart and something we think is going to make a difference. And, you know, I just want to keep growing that. I want to keep growing that nonprofit. Me and my wife started that a year ago, but before that, we were doing it just out of our names. We were helping people. We were selling fight-worn things and donating the money to charity, and we just decided to start our own, give it its own identity, and now we have the Good Fight Foundation.
Well, Dustin, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate the work that you and your wife are doing with the foundation, and best of luck to you on Saturday night, brother, and bring Acadiana home back that belt, my friend.
Thank you so much. I will.
And that was Dustin Poirier, who's fighting for the UFC lightweight belt at UFC 236 on Saturday night. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, it'll be time for my rant of the week. Stay tuned right here on 103.7 The Game.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Dear LSU basketball fans, the sky is not falling. Just breathe. The reaction I've seen about all of these LSU Tigers declaring for the NBA draft has been utter panic. It is as if LSU fans became Chicken Little. The sky is falling. No, it's not. You know why it's not? Because it's not. It's very simple. I understand five guys have declared for the NBA draft that played on this year's team. I get it. Is Naz Reid coming back? Nope. He's going to be a first-round pick. He's gone. Could Tremont Waters come back? Sure. I don't think he will. I think he's done in BR. But if you asked me today if I think that Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, and Emmett Williams, the other three guys who have declared for the NBA draft, if they are in fact not coming back to LSU, I'm going to tell you no, they're coming back to LSU. The reason is because they are allowed to. This is not what it used to be years ago where you declare for the draft and you start the process and you go through the combine, and then if you do that, you can't come back to school. That's not how this operates. LSU fans, you know this because Tremont Waters went through this same process last year where he flirted with possibly going to the NBA and decided to come back instead. And the rule is this. The NCAA Division I Council agreed back in January of 2016, that's 3 years ago, to push back the date when men's basketball players must remove their names from the NBA draft pool until late May. The decision, that decision went into effect that year in 2016. That rule changed. It reversed a 2009 decision that had moved the date back to February. This change that went into effect in 2016 allows players more time to gather information before making a decision. It also allows many of them to participate in the NBA draft combine. The only thing these cats are doing is seeing where they stand with the NBA. They're going to go through the draft combine process, and they're going to get some honest critiques about their game, about what's lacking, about what some strengths are, what they can work on, where they possibly would be drafted at. The NBA and the NCAA has started to do this because they got tired of having so many guys declare for the draft, getting poor advice. They declare for the draft, then they can't go back to school, and they end up playing in over in, you know, a Soviet bloc country, trying to make a living, playing pro basketball. Okay? Getting paid with Brussels sprouts and stale beer. Okay? They got tired of having that happen. So now they have it set up where these guys think that they're NBA ready or just want to try to test the waters. And they go through the process. They go to the NBA Combine and they get honest critiques from teams, franchises, scouts, and they go, you're not ready. You need to develop a 12-foot jump shot. You need to improve on your shot blocking ability. You need to figure out how to do transition defense better for the next level. And this allows them to do that. And this allows them to get some honest critiquing and figuring out if they're good enough to play at the next level and what they need to do when they come back to school to improve themselves to be able to play at the next level. They also can do this. In the example of Waters and Reed, have signed with an agency, okay? Which used to be a big no-no. If you signed, that was the death nail. If you signed with an agent, that was it. You can't come back, bro. No more. But that's not the case anymore. Even Tremont Waters and Naz Reed, who have signed with agents, they can still retain an agent and cut ties with that said agent and come back to school within 10 days after the NBA draft combine. So even in this scenario with Tremont Waters and Naz Reed, who have signed with agents, if they go through the draft combine and they say they get the responses and the feedback from front office personnel and coaches and scouts that they're not ready, that they need to get bigger and stronger, that they need to work on their jump shot, that they need to work on how to rebound properly, they can get rid of that agent as long as it's within 10 days of the completion of the NBA draft combine, and they can come back to LSU and they can still be a Tiger and they can still bleed that purple and gold and they will still take the court for you inside the PMAC next year. So, yes, I understand it's a flurry of activity from the men's basketball team where you've had five players declare in well-written, dramatic Instagram post, and your interim coach is flirting with going to an SEC rival, and your head coach is finally meeting with the university and the NCAA today. I get all that. But majority of these guys are going to be on next year's team. First of all, there's only so many spots in the NBA. There's only two rounds to the draft. Five guys from LSU are not going to be drafted. One, maybe two, maybe two. The rest of the guys are going to have to get into a camp or go to the G League or go play overseas. They're exploring their options. And like I said before to start the show, and me and Cody talked about this, this is their way also of not only finding out where they fit moving forward with their professional careers, but this is also to serve as a notice to the university and the athletic department to get it together. Figure out what we're going to do. If Will Wade is going to be our coach, great. If he's not, that's great too. Get it together. Because we don't have to play for this team. We don't have to be an LSU Tiger. So Joe Oliva, the rest of the administration, get it together. That said, I expect at least three of the five guys to be back in the purple and gold next year. So the sky is not falling for LSU men's basketball. So calm down. Enjoy the weekend. No need to be all fired up.
So let me ask you this, coming off of that rant of the week, because I understand exactly what you're saying. But if you think three of the five guys are coming back, then that means either Tremont Waters or Javonte Smart is returning. Which one?
Javonte.
Okay.
I think Waters tested the felt out NBA teams last year because there was a distinct possibility that he was going to go last year. I think he's going to go this year. I think he's undersized. I think he's going to have to earn his way up from, like, the G League because he's smaller.
But he's always been undersized, and he says because he was asked last year. I remember this because it stood out to me so much. He was asked, you know, Tremont, how do you play the style of basketball you do with as short as you are amongst the trees and things like that? And I remember him just kind of laughing and being like, I've always been the shortest or one of the shortest guys on the court.
It's the NBA teams don't draft small guys.
No, I understand that, but
they don't. They would rather take a guy on potential. The reason why Naz Reid is more appealing to NBA franchises, Tremont Waters is a better player. Okay, he just is. He's a better defender. He's better on the perimeter. Obviously, he's a guard, but he's a better overall player. But Naz Reid has that potential because he has the big body. He has the prototypical body. So they knock Tremont because he's a little bit smaller, but Tremont's the type of guy that will go undrafted and that they'll sign to the team and he'll stick around and play in the NBA for 8 to 10 years.
And that was my point. That's what I was saying. Just because he's a small guy, he's said it himself. He's always been a small guy on the court. This is how he plays. He doesn't know how to play basketball any other way than being the smallest dude on the court. So I don't think if he doesn't make it in the NBA, it won't be because he's 5'11". You know?
No, he won't get drafted because he's 5'11".
That could be very true.
Okay. He'll make it in the NBA despite his size. But it's just that mentality of the front office, right? And that's the thing. Because there are smaller guys they can do. The bigger thing for Tremont Waters to work on, he turns over the ball way too much. And NBA teams do not want their guards turning over the ball. They don't. You have to be able to take better care of the ball, and he's not being consistent with that. He was better at it this year than he was last year, but he still turns over the ball way too much.
Yeah, I wonder. I'd like to know. I have no idea, but I just wonder how many of those turnovers are passes that in the NBA guys catch or guys come up with.
That's a fair point.
That in college maybe you're just not ready for, or it's slightly out of your reach. It wasn't the greatest pass, but an NBA player gets to it to where maybe, you know, a college guy doesn't on any given play. I don't know. That's just thoughts that pop into my head when I think about Tremont Waters in the NBA. Do I expect big things from him in the NBA? I don't expect big things, but would I be shocked if
he's going to be a role player?
Would I be shocked if he has that one season where he's draining threes and he goes and wins like the 3-point competition or something like that during All-Star weekend? I could
skills
see
skills competition, yeah.
Yeah, not making an All-Star team or nothing crazy, maybe not, but winning a skills contest or a 3-point contest. I could see that.
I could see that. Look, when you look at the other thing that I think people aren't looking at when it comes to these guys declaring, this is a tight-knit group, right? We've established that from the day that Wade Sims died. This team rallied around and came together, okay? What's not to say that they're not declaring for the draft so they can go through the draft combine together? You understand what I'm saying? Like, they know Naz is going to go. He's going to be a first-round pick, but this is one more opportunity for them to represent LSU together, and they can all go to the combine together and work out together. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that could be part of it, too, where it's like, well, you know, hey, Naz and Tremont are going. So Skylar's like, yeah, let's all go do this, you know. Let's all go do this. And him and Javonte and Emmett say, yeah, let's go do this together. So that could be part of it, too, where it's just like, hey, we're boys, let's go do this together and take part in the NBA draft combine. I actually think also of the guys, oddly enough, the guy that does not need to be able to go to the NBA because he's already going to be locked up with his degree and what his profession is going to be, Skylar Mays,
right?
I think he can play at the next level. He has good enough. He's a good enough ball handler. He can shoot the three. He can attack the basket. And I think he's a guy, too. There are times where, even though I think Tremont Waters may be a more athletically gifted player than Skylar, there's been times where I think Skylar Mays is the better player, if that makes any sense. But LSU fans, the sky is, in fact, not falling. Not all those guys are not leaving the program. Okay? They're going to come back, regardless if Will Wade is their coach or not. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, We're going to check in with our good friend from the Daily Advertiser, Eric Narcisse, talking a little prep softball playoffs and baseball playoffs start next week, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parson III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. Now is your time to call. We were going to have our good friend from the Daily Advertiser, Eric Narcisse, on the program. Come to find out that he's a little preoccupied, and deservingly so. He does not need to be on the program this week or even next week because his wife is in labor. So congratulations to him and his wife for bringing in their bundle of joy. And he even answered his phone.
That's a first for me.
And he said, my bad.
Yeah.
It's like, no, dude.
Hundreds of people a year. Hundreds and hundreds of people a year. And this is a first one. For me, he doesn't answer the first time, so we do the natural,
give
him a second ring. Yeah, just to see. You know, sometimes you can't get to your phone or it's lost under the seat and you need it to vibrate again, whatever. So, you know, you call him again. He picks up the phone and let's see if I can recreate how it
Hello? Hey, Cody. Oh, man. Hey, I totally forgot, man. Don't be mad. Hey, I'm in the hospital right now.
Don't be mad.
My wife just went into labor. My bad. She like just went into labor.
I'm over here like, dude, go do it. Why did you even answer the phone? Like, what are you?
He's like, yeah, man, my bad, dude. I gotta go. I'm so sorry.
That's professional.
Like, go have your baby. Like, I can just see him like huddled in the corner of the obvious like no cell phone area of the hospital. Like,
hey, man, hey, I can't come on the show this morning. My wife's having my child right now. I gotta go.
Like, yeah, I guess you do, man. Eric, congratulations to the Narcisse family.
Yes. So congratulations, Eric. We will get with him at a later date. He's got bigger things to worry about than coming on to the Rap Game.
Something else I discovered, I figure we might as well point out because...
By all means.
We had Dustin Poirier on the show at the top of 7 o'clock here. And if you're interested in watching UFC 236 and seeing if Dustin Poirier can, in fact, bring that belt home back to Lafayette.
That's right. He told everyone when his flight was returning.
Yeah, so you know
1 o'clock on Sunday.
You know when to meet him at the airport with that UFC championship.
Lafayette
belt.
Regional Airport needs to beef up security. There may be some fans out there on Sunday.
The Diamonds bringing the belt home.
There it is.
But it's an interesting thing. If you remember, ESPN and UFC came in with this big, huge, gigantic
mega deal
with billions of dollars being thrown around from people and whatnot. And that is now fully into effect now that we're in 2019. So UFC 236, you're going to be able to watch the early prelims, which start at like 5:15, and that'll be on their Fight Pass, which I believe is just an app you can download, or it's a streaming service that you can watch it on there. And then the regular prelims will just move to regular old cable television. You can find that on the network there. And then the main card, which Dustin Poirier will be headlining, starts at 9 p.m. Central, and it's on that new ESPN Plus. I was telling Raymond during the break here, I haven't really technically subscribed to that since it started. I did get the free trial because earlier this week there was something on there that I wanted to watch, so I signed up for the free trial. And so it just happens to work out for me that UFC 236, which is being aired on this as well, I'm going to be able to watch for free. So just a little note there, if you were curious on where to find this Poirier fight, you can do that on that ESPN Plus platform.
Cody, I need to, since we got a little time here.
We do.
You know, things got a little testy between you and I on yesterday's program when I mentioned the Atlanta Braves. And I was mentioning these other teams in Major League Baseball.
Oh.
And I omitted your Chicago Cubs, who you're rocking right now.
I am. Wait. Okay, it's really hard. Like, can you see it?
Oh, you got Ryan's. You got the Ryan shirt jersey.
Yeah, it's the Terrio shirt.
Nice.
Jersey. Yes.
Nice.
I told you, my Cubs fandom goes back. It's not something that like just sprouted up when the Cubs got good. I remember my favorite player in this will tell you about my Cubs fandom. My favorite player in Major League Baseball growing up, and when I say growing up, I guess I mean between like 15 and maybe like 17, maybe like 14 and 17 in that area where you're like, oh man, you're playing high school sports and every baseball, go, go, was Derek Lee. He was my favorite Major League Baseball player.
You make me feel
in my high school. It was Derek Lee, who by no means was a perennial all-star. Good player. A great player. You know, good player. I loved him, but was not by any means a great, great. And, you know, now that I think about it, my current favorite player in Major League Baseball is also the Cubs' first baseman. I don't know if there's a connection to be made there or not, but Derek Lee was my favorite player. Now Anthony Rizzo is my favorite player. Same position. I don't know if that means anything. It's facts.
Well, that is facts. Factual also is you better pay some respect to Mark Grace.
Oh, well, that was before Derek Lee even. That was the no batting gloves. He was like, he was, I mean, it broke my heart. And also I hope I'm not misremembering, he was the starting first baseman for that Diamondbacks World Series
team.
That
is correct.
Good.
He finally got his World
Series. I wanted
Series
to make sure I didn't
D-backs.
Sound stupid here, nope. But I was pretty sure. It broke my heart and filled me with, like, that to me was the definition of bittersweet, watching Mark Gray celebrate that World Series, because he is a Cub through and through, no matter what. You know, when people think Mark Grace, you think Chicago Cubs, but his World Series championship ring is with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Good for him, very happy for him, but it was bittersweet. I mean, do you remember those Cubs teams with Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood, Matt Clement, Carlos Zambrano? I mean, those guys up and down were just...
Don't forget about Alou.
Oh, Moises Alou and all that. Yeah, I mean, I was just running through. That was all pitchers. I named four out of the five starting pitchers. Like, those guys were studs. And it never quite came together for whatever reason or another. I mean, the Cardinals are the main reason, I think, except for 2000.
Or also Kerry Wood's health.
Yeah, and but I don't feel... I respect what the Cubs did for Kerry Wood because they tried. It's not like
they did.
It's not like when he got hurt and kind of got lost his mojo, they just tossed him to the curb and were like, sorry. No, I mean, they put him in the bullpen. They sent him to AAA. They brought him back up. They tried starting him for a while. He was the closer for like half a season. I mean, they tried for Kerry Wood. But I think your point in bringing up the Cubs in Major League Baseball is that the season so far has not been going well for my Cubbies, which is the complete antithesis how it has been going for your Bravos.
Oh, my Braves didn't start off good either. They lost that opening series to the Phillies.
Oh, I guess I meant as to up to right now. They're first place in that vaunted division, right?
We do have the Marlins in our division.
Look out, brother. Hey, I'm just saying. We used to have the Pirates. Now they're like trying to be good, and it bothers me.
It bothers you? First of all, nothing that the Pirates do should bother you.
Well, they're trying to be good. It upsets me.
I'd be more worried about the Brewers or obviously the Cardinals.
The Cardinals are always that team that just...
Well, that's your rival. That's your hated rival. That's right. That's your hated rival. But, Cody, can this bitterness between us...
Oh, yeah, it's fine. I mean, I don't have any bitterness between the... I mean, the Braves are in the National League. That's the only reason that I even sort of kind of would be like, get out of the Braves, forget the Braves. But... Which is good for me because with the Astros being in the American League now, I can kind of pull for them. I don't want to say root, but I pull for the Astros. I like to see them do very good because they're a fun team and they're local-ish. We carry the games. So I love the Astros, but it's only because they're in the American League.
So we're all good. I don't have to prove to you that I used to root for the Cubs as well. That was my secondary team.
Well, yeah. And you've told people this before. The reason you pull for the Cubs is essentially the same reason I pulled for the Cubs, because growing up, there were two baseball teams on, basically. It was the Braves and the Cubs.
That's correct.
WGN. And I watched the Cubs, and then I was also, you have to remember this, I was 8 years old and a huge baseball kid. Like, I played T-ball starting at like 3 years old, and I mean, my dad coached me. It was all baseball. Me and my little brother played wiffle ball in the backyard all the time. 1998, I was 8 years old. I feel like the prime age to watch Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa
hit home run after home run.
First to 62. Who's going to get there? I mean, if you were...
It brought baseball back.
If you were a baseball fan.
Because all the people that stopped watching because of the strike.
You had to pay attention
in 94, the 94 strike that killed a lot of fandom.
I was just amazed by these two guys at 8 years old, home run after home run. And then, so you had to pick one or the other. If you were a baseball fan in that year, whether you were a Cubs or Cardinals fan was irrelevant. You either were pulling for Sammy Sosa to get there first or Mark McGwire to get there first. And I think it was the hop is what made the difference. The big hop that Sosa would do when he hit his home run. He'd hit the ball. He knew it was gone. He'd give you the big hop out of the batter's box. And as a kid, I think I thought that was so cool. Like, yeah, Mark McGwire was the more imposing of the two, the big force. He looked, his bat was 36 inches long. He looked like he was swinging a toothpick. I mean,
he was like Paul Bunyan out there.
Right. It was, he was the more impressive of the two, but Sammy Sosa just brought me in. And it turns out they both cheated in different ways, but that's, that's irrelevant. It was still a just polarizing thing happening. And I latched on to Sammy Sosa. And I wanted him to win. He didn't win. Mark McGwire hit more home runs. He got there first. I mean, Sosa got to the record, but McGwire got the better of him that season. But I latched on to Sammy Sosa. I went out and bought the local Walmart bat. It was like the Sammy Sosa 550 or something like that, small barrel bat. That, yeah. Like, I mean, he was my guy. And then that just turned into this big Cubs fandom. And, I mean, I've lived through the Alfonso Sorianos. I've lived through the Moises Alous. I've lived through the former Tigers infield of Ryan Terrio and Mike Fontenot turning double plays for the Cubs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been fun, but it's been not fun sometimes too.
For me, if you grew up in the Southeast in the 80s, it was the Braves. Like, and that's the thing, like, we worshiped Dale Murphy. That's my all-time favorite player is the Murphy.
When did Hank Aaron stop playing?
Oh, when I was a kid.
Okay.
When I was little. But Murphy, number three, right field, started off as a catcher, two-time league MVP. He was the guy for us, and it's a very weird thing, like particularly maybe not as much here in Louisiana because you had the proximity to the Astros.
Right, that Mississippi is kind of that right. Breaking state.
But Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia for sure.
The majority of the Gulf Coast.
We were Braves fans. We heard it on the radio. Okay, my grandfather, every game, this is what my grandfather would do. He'd get off work, and if they were on TBS, great. My grandfather had cable because of the Braves, right. So he could watch the Braves. But not every Braves game back in those days were broadcast on TV. The TBS broadcast some of them, but not all of them. A lot of the games were on the radio. My grandfather used to sit by his bar in his den and listen to the game. He'd stay up. If it was a West Coast game, because back in those days, they played in the same division with the Dodgers. Yes, Atlanta and Los Angeles were in the same division. Okay? It's just like, yeah, like who's making these decisions? So they were playing in the same division. So the Dodgers, we'd have to play the Dodgers a lot. My grandfather would have to get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work. He'd stay up all night listening to the Braves games. But for us kids that grew up in the southeast corner of the United States, it was Dale Murphy. It was the Braves. We were the superstation generation of that. Right. And I had my little hard plastic knockoff helmet that didn't go all the way around. It just stayed.
It was the catcher's helmet.
It was like the John Olerud helmet. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If you remember that. And grew up loving Murphy. And I remember those Braves teams when I was a kid with Rafael Ramirez and Bob Horner.
Andres Galarraga.
Oh,
the big cat.
The big cat would come later. And then, you know, we get rid of Murphy and all of a sudden we get good. All those prospects like Smoltz and Tom Savage.
John Maddox.
Steve Avery. Everyone forgets about Steve Avery before they got Maddox away from the Cubs. And then you had Ron Gann and David Justice and all those guys. Otis Nixon.
Chipper.
Chipper came later. Or Larry, if you want to call him, because that's his government name is actual Larry. Chipper Jones is actually Larry.
How dare you pull back the curtain?
And Bobby Cox and Leo on the bench, the pitching.
I'm going to keep naming guys that came later. Andrew Jones.
Who never lived up to the hype.
I just love the way he used to catch the ball. I watched so many kids drop fly balls trying to impersonate Andrew Jones that it's amazing.
It would be great if he actually had plate discipline and didn't swing at pitches in the dirt all the time.
If he hit it, though, bruh.
When he did hit it.
If he hit it, it was going
he could have been a Hall of Famer. He could have been a Hall of Famer.
That dude could crush. But
there was like Ken Griffey Jr. hype associated with him when he came up.
Chris Reed's.
As 19.
Chris Reed's plate mentality inside Andrew Jones's body. I don't know if he ever gets out.
Terry Pendleton, league MVP, journeyman, but a league MVP for the Braves, who was the hitting coach. He even desperate. He said, "We tried to get Andrew. We tried to get Andrew to be more disciplined at the plate."
How many years did Sheffield? Didn't Gary Sheffield spend some time in Atlanta? Or was that just like a quick stint? Just a quick
I think
stop?
That was like a quick.
Just like maybe a year or two, maybe.
Yeah. We had the crime dog, Fred McGriff.
Yeah. Yeah.
He played for us for a little while.
He was always like Fred McGriff, I found, was who, and maybe it's just body type, maybe, but I always found like Derek Lee played like a
Fred McGriff.
Fred McGriff 2.0. And Fred McGriff also. Did he finish his career with the Cubs? He went over there and he played.
Fred McGriff played for like 27 teams in his career.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He played a year or two with the Cubs. I don't know.
But yeah, but you're talking about fandom. You know, it's very much baseball more than any other sport, more than basketball or football, because people's fandom changes with basketball and football. Okay, you just do. Sometimes you outgrow a team or you start rooting for another team or something like that. But baseball is very much always linked to the team of your childhood.
Seems that way.
And it sticks, and you never get, you know, you.
It takes another type of experience, like going to spring training for maybe a team that's not the team that you pull for number one. You spend an entire week at spring training for a different club. You have this incredible experience. You meet the guys or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that could maybe waver you to a different team. But, I mean, that's an extreme and incredible experience. So.
Correct. But baseball, because that's the first sport you usually play.
Yeah, T-ball, yeah.
And you're usually taught by your dad.
Yeah.
And you usually root for the team that your dad roots for, too, yep. 9 times out of 10.
Case and pulls for the Cubs.
That solidifies itself, and you never get away from that. 9 times out of 10. That's the team. Your team of your childhood is usually your baseball team, and that's the team that you keep for the rest of your adult life. So we got some baseball talk.
Oh, captain, my captain.
When we come back, we will wrap up the second hour here of the Rap Game with RP3. Leonard Fournette is in the news for all the wrong reasons. We'll dive into that right here on 103.7 The Game. Big shout out to caller. Go ahead, Cody. Who
Craig,
made us remind.
Craig hit us up during the break. We were talking Major League Baseball teams, our fandoms. And Craig, I don't know if he's a Braves fan or not, but I think so. I'm going to say he's a Braves fan. And he wanted to know how you, Raymond, the Braves fan of the two of us, missed prime time.
I did not miss prime time. I loved watching prime
Look how
time.
Quickly he jumped.
I did not miss prime time. Now, the Braves front office, they couldn't wait to get rid of prime time because of his affinity for playing football.
Have you seen? Have you and Hattie watched Boss Baby? Have you seen Boss Baby yet?
No.
Okay. Well, at the end, it's like a Men in Black thing. They do like a forget the baby. And I feel like that. Forget the prime time.
Yeah. I always wonder what Deion could have been if he had just played baseball. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, the best cornerback cover corner I've ever seen in my life in football.
So what does that mean if he plays just football?
Even better. That's a good discussion.
He can fly. He can literally fly.
That cat was something else.
From good football playing news to
bad football playing news. We have to touch on this. So Leonard Fournette, former LSU star running back and current Jacksonville Jaguar running back, was arrested the other day, Thursday afternoon. He was arrested for speeding and knowingly driving with a suspended license, according to records from the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. His speed has not been revealed in the reports, but Fournette was taken into custody. He paid a $1,500 bail to be released. According to a TV station in Jacksonville, the arrest stems from an unpaid speeding ticket back in November when Fournette was cited for driving only 12 miles over the speed limit. So he got an initial speeding ticket for going 12 miles over the speed limit, didn't pay the ticket, just said, nah, I ain't going to do that. Then goes, his license gets suspended because of that, because he didn't pay the speeding ticket, and then he gets caught speeding again with a suspended license on top of it. Now look, the Jaguars say they're aware of this situation, but this is just the latest in a string of incidents with Fournette, with his future of the Jaguars in doubt. The others have resulted in suspension, publicly being taken to the woodshed by Executive Vice President Tom Coughlin, and also loss of guaranteed money. So, will Leonard Fournette be a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars this season? I don't know. I'd say it's 50-50 right now because Tom Coughlin does not play. We know that. When we come back, we'll talk more NFL with Barry Hurstis right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for the clocker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parch III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the third and final hour of the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos, as always. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've touched on LSU hoops drama. We've given you our take on the first round of the Masters. We've talked about UL spring football moving inside to the Montclaw. I gave my rant of the week about LSU hoops. We talked a little baseball fandom about childhood, the team that you attach yourself to. And we even touched on Leonard Fournette making headlines for all the wrong reasons. But we're going to keep the pro football talk moving forward. The NFL draft is 2 weeks from yesterday. That's right. It's already here. We're less than 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. So it's our time to head out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is a contributing writer for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He is our boy, our good friend, the one and only, Barry Hurstis. Barry, how are you this morning, brother?
RP3, how are you doing this morning, my friend?
We're having a grand old time here in Lafayette, my friend. So let's get right to it. You have a terrific piece that you wrote for BigEasyMagazine.com that I recommend everyone go check out about why the Saints may no longer be high on Andrus Peat despite him coming off a Pro Bowl season. It's been an up and down career for him, as you stated, 4 years of both good and bad performances. You put out there in the article that he possibly could be traded heading into the draft or on draft night. Elaborate on that, Barry.
Well, here's your dilemma with Andrus Peat if you're a Saint. Notably, to me, and this is why I wrote the article, because I don't think a lot of the Saints beat writers or the columnists, and let me state up front before we go any further, this was not a hit piece on Andrus Peat, because it got twisted a little bit on Facebook, on a lot of the Saints groups where the article got posted. This was not a hit piece by any stretch of the imagination. I think Andrus Peat is a phenomenal player. But admittedly, he probably would be the first to admit he's had an up and down career in his first 4 years in the NFL. People forget, conveniently forget. I've noticed in my research for putting the article together that a lot of the other people that cover the Saints very notably failed to mention that when he was drafted, the original plan for him was to go at right tackle. Even though he was a left tackle for the majority of his career at Stanford, the Saints were going to get him to play right tackle to replace Zach Streif, because they knew Zach Streif was getting close to retirement, which we all know he eventually did, but they wound up going with Ramczyk. And now Ramczyk is the guy who obviously took over.
Yeah, and so, Andrus Peat, they couldn't find a spot for him on the field for the first couple of seasons.
Exactly right.
Until they finally
lose sight of that fact.
Right. Until they finally moved him to the inside.
He was certainly not cut out for a right tackle. We saw that with our own eyes. But he's a capable left tackle, but he's not a great left tackle by any stretch. And I think he would be the first to admit that. However, at left guard, he excels. That's indisputable. I mean, the guy went to the Pro Bowl last year. I know he was an alternate. He wasn't first team. Not here or there. The kid can play. He always could. I mean, you're talking about a guy who in high school was the number one offensive lineman in the entire country. I mean, this kid is an athletic freak. I mean, he blew people away at the combine with the way he ran. Mike Mayock, now the Raiders GM, is in love with him, which is part of the reason why I wrote the piece. So, but anyway, long story short, this was not, you know, I don't want Saints fans to get this twisted. I think Peter is a great player. That said, he is, for a guy who was a number one pick, you would not say you would have been blown away by his performance in the first four seasons that he's been with the team. You just haven't. Because, again, he's had injuries. He's had some serious, you know, he's had the leg fracture after the playoff game in 2017. You know, and, knee, he's had a few other nagging low injuries here or there. So he's always wound up missing time, you know. So even though he's supposed to be the fill-in for Armstead, who's always hurt all the time as well. So he hasn't been the most reliable guy. You know, Bushrod had to go in there for him a few times last year. So that, to me, should, and perhaps the reason why he never got a contract extension offer from the Saints this offseason because they're taking all this into account. And that's what I was trying to convey in the article. So now you're the Saints. You're coming up on this draft. You very notably now don't have a first-round pick. You don't, you know, you only got the second, the number 62 overall in round two, and you don't have nothing in the third or the fourth either. So now, you know, look, this is a deep draft. Again, there are several positions in this draft. Quarterback's not one, but tight end and offensive line. This is a deep draft, and there's a lot of guys that have a lot of versatility. And what they had one in yesterday for a visit, Dalton Risner from Kansas State, who was there yesterday, who can play guard and center. Don't even rule out the Saints, and we'll touch on that in a minute. But don't even rule out the Saints drafting a center at 62. You never know. You just never know.
Barry, I mean, let me ask you this,
even
brother.
If they sign Nick Easton, they might see center as a priority. So we won't know until the second day of the draft. But all I'm saying is, and to get back to Andrew's Pete, don't be surprised if he got offered up in a trade. And the Oakland Raiders are a very intriguing team because of the friendship between Gruden and Sean Payton and the very notable affection that Mike Mayock probably still might have for Andrew Pete. Could the Raiders use a new starting left guard in their rebuild? I mean, they have a long-term plan for rebuilding that franchise. Would Andrew Pete intrigue them? Probably. So
you could probably get Barry right. You could probably, if you do a trade with the Raiders, you could probably at least maybe get you another second round pick, maybe a third, because the Raiders also have a plethora of picks. They're one of the few teams out there that have a bevy of picks, so that makes sense. Plus, Eason, who you got from Minnesota, everyone has lined him up to be a center, but he's also played guard, so you could simply have him be your left guard, and then just find you another center either in free agency or through the draft.
Or even draft one, yeah, absolutely. And look, you even got guys like Cameron Tom and Will Clapp on your roster. Look, they have options. The bottom line is they have options. But again, I'm sure you'll touch back and allude to that fact. This team is so close, RP3. This team is so close. They don't have to do much. All you got to do is just, I mean, look, you were one blown, ridiculously blown officials. NFL referees call away from going to the Super Bowl. I mean, so you don't have to change much. And as I told another program last night, the bottom line is with this team, the biggest question is how long does Drew Brees have left? That's what this all comes down to. How the quote unquote window of opportunity? How much longer does this franchise have to win the Super Bowl before Breeze retires. That's what they need to determine. So what do you have? You know, man, there's not a whole lot to tweak here. There's just not. I mean, yeah, I know losing Ingram. Some people are still concerned about that. Well, you know, yeah, you can't be projecting. Like, I see people projecting Latavius Murray, saying he's going to be a bust and all this stuff. You don't know that. It's April. Come on, man. So, you know, let's see how it plays out. You got training camp. You got all this stuff. But, I just don't see Latavius Murray, Ingram thing being that much of a difference maker. I just think this team is so close. And Peyton and Loomis know this. They're not stupid. So I think you're going to see them make sound. Yeah, they might. Will they make me pull off a trade? I hope they do. I would love to see them just replenish their roster. You know, again, you don't have to do much. A center, a wide receiver. Yeah, I see a lot of people picking, and even my mock draft has the Saints going wide receiver at 62. Would they, if a kid like Andy Isabella or whoever is just sitting there, Debo Samuel from South Carolina? Look, there's likely going to be some receiver that falls into that range right there at 62. I'm sure Sean Payton is going to consider it. Don't even kid yourselves for a minute. But look, if they think that Tre'Quan Smith and Keith Kirkwood can take that next step, so to speak, and be the, you know, and fill out that wide receiver core and leave it pretty much as is, so to speak, they might do that. Who knows? You know, you never know. You just never know. But then again, you know, if a guy like Hakeem Butler of Iowa State falls to 62, are you going to pass on that kid and putting that kid on the opposite side of Michael Thomas? Oh my God, that'd be phenomenal. So again, you know, so there's options. There's plenty of options in this draft. I think Saints fans just make the assumption that, well, you know, they don't have a first round pick, so I'm just not going to pay attention to the draft this year because they're not going to get any. Yeah, okay. Well, remember, some of the greatest Saints in team history were late round draft picks. Marcus Colston, for crying out loud. I mean, come on. So, you know, I wouldn't dismiss this draft, and I wouldn't dismiss this front office for pulling off a few little Look, Alvin Kamara is a third-round pick, okay, that they traded, that they wheeled and dealed. Don't be surprised that they made that type of a trade. Again, I'm not suggesting they're going to land another Alvin Kamara, you know, 2 out of 3 years. I'm just saying they've done it before. They have a proven track record. So Saints fans, stop panicking and just let them do their thing.
We're talking to Barry Hirsis, a senior contributor for the Saints News Network, as well as Big Easy Magazine. And Barry, you mentioned a lot of those guys that they could draft there in the second round if they stay pat. You can read an article by Barry about all of those players on the SaintsNewsNetwork.com. Barry, what I need from you right now, though, brother, is they may stay pat there with the second round pick. Do you feel, what's the percentage that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, they make a deal, whether it's trading Andres Pete or trading their first rounder in 2020 to get back into this round? Do you think, what's the percentage that they do some moves like that to increase their draft picks?
Ooh, I'm going to go 50-50.
Really? You think
absolutely. And look, I don't want to make people's heads explode here, okay, because they're going to say, oh, you know, it's just the RP3. And this guy trying to be sensational or something just to get ratings or something. No, but I'm being quite serious here. If I'm just throwing it out there, because the Saints wouldn't be the only team. There would be several potential suitors. If Arizona takes Kyler Murray first, they're obviously not going to keep Josh Rosen. Okay. That's the big million-dollar question around the draft right now. What is Arizona going to do about Kyler Murray? And if they do draft Kyler Murray, obviously, then what's going to happen with Josh Rosen? Okay, now I can assure you that the Saints would not be the only suitor, but I'm just throwing it out there. I guarantee you the Saints would be a suitor. I'm not saying that, not suggesting anything beyond that. All I'm saying is, don't kid yourself. If Josh Rosen became available all of a sudden, the Saints would be one of the players.
They would be one of several teams that would be a player.
I know about Bridgewater. I get it. But I'm sorry, but it's just something to me that's notable. The only signing for, and I get it, you know, they can do all this after Breeze retired. I get all that. But you had a chance right then and there to hammer something out long term, you know, just to make sure this guy doesn't go nowhere. The fact that you only gave him 1 year, it's almost like there's a loophole there for both sides. There's an out for Teddy and there's an out for the Saints. I just think that's notable. Some people might think I'm a nut for even suggesting. Okay, that's fine. But the fact that they left themselves the option speaks volumes to me. So that's all I'm saying. And look, hey, man, we don't know. Well, we don't know. And that's, again, it all comes back to this. How long does Drew Brees have left? We'll save that for another show in the future down the line when I come back about Drew Brees and my belief that he's 40 years old now, and maybe, and we saw at the tail end of that season last year. I'm not saying he's the quote unquote the dreaded physical decline has begun. But there are some signs that are suggesting that, hey, I mean, after all, he just turned 40, for crying out loud. Okay? There are some signs that, hey, maybe it's the early stages of it, so to speak. And so then, you know.
But Barry, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 40 years old, and I feel like I'm just hitting my prime, brother.
I'm 51, so I don't need to even go there.
Brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. We got to go up to the break, but I know you're amped up for the draft, only being a couple weeks out. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
You got it, buddy.
That's a very amped up Barry Hurstis. My man is ready for the draft. He is ready to go to Nashville for the draft right now.
Could you imagine if the Saints had actual picks?
Oh, Barry is going to be out of control the next couple weeks. We love him, though. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, RPOs with RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
RPOs with RP3 time. On the final edition of Rap Game with RP3. We're live from the 237 Roof Studios, hanging out with you, and we're going to dive right into it. I will start off by saying this, though. RPOs with RP3, not going anywhere when RP3 and company comes around next week, because
that is correct.
RP3 is going to be here, and that's all we really need to do RPOs with RP3.
Thank you.
Let's start off talking some LSU baseball, man. They're traveling to Missouri this weekend, and Daniel Cabrera is making the trip. Cabrera hasn't played since the Mississippi State series, but according to Coach Maneri, Cabrera was hitting off of a tee on Wednesday, and on Thursday, he took live batting practice. Those are promising. RPO time. Daniel Cabrera will return to the lineup this weekend and be effective.
Pass.
No. On which part?
I'd say it's 75% chance that he won't come back to the lineup. Why rush him back? Okay. You're going to need his power bat and his fielding skills if you want to win the SEC and make a run in the tournament. Why bring him back against an inferior team like Missouri? It does not benefit you. He just was hitting off the tee on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And it's going to be chilly and damp up in Missouri this weekend. Not exactly ideal conditions to come back from an injury. So I say it's past that he even plays. If he does play, it'll be as a pinch hitter, maybe. And I don't know how effective he's going to be after being sidelined for as long as he is.
That's a fair point when you answer both of my questions. Let's move on. Number two, talk a little Masters. Rory McIlroy. You talked about it earlier. He is underperforming, to say the least, at the Masters. After the first day, he is one over par. And I'm going to make this one simple enough for you. I looked it up. PGAtour.com. The cut projections for the Masters. There is a 26% chance that the cut will be 2 over par.
Okay.
There is a 25% chance that the cut will be 3 over par. So we're basically looking at 2 or 3 over par is where they're looking at the cut.
Okay.
RPO, Rory McIlroy, misses the cut.
Pass.
So he's going to make the cut?
I think he's going to make the cut.
So he's going to turn it
up. Even if he just shoots even par today. he's going to make
if the projections hold still. Yes,
right. If the projections hold still, he can still be even par. Hell, he can be one over and still make the cut.
So he's just got to do a little better.
He's just got to do just a little bit better with the stick, and he will make the cut. And Rory's the type that would probably shoot well over the weekend and put himself like right outside the top 10 right. for the tournament. I think he makes the cut. Now, if you ask me if Jordan Spieth and Justin Rose are going to make the cut, both at three over right now, I'd say they're going to miss the cut. That's a run all day. They're going to miss the cut.
Fair enough. We got one more for you real quick. The Mariners of Seattle, April champions, right?
They are the April champions.
They are 13-2, the best record in baseball by a few games, to be honest with you. The Strohs, they're 8-5. Four games behind Seattle in the division. The Strohs and M's, they open up a series tonight in Seattle. RPO on the Strohs winning this series on the road.
Run. They take two of three.
And they're a better team, I think.
They're a better team. And if they perform the way they did against the New York Yankees, that they did right there at the big juice box, if they play like they did against the Yankees, they could sweep the Mariners. But I say they'll take two of three. They'll win the series and gain ground on them in the AL West standings.
I mean, if they sweep the series, they're one game back after this.
Correct.
I believe it's a three-game set.
Yes, and the Mariners, great start, but you don't put up banners for being the April champion. Okay? Just saying. So, yeah, I expect the Strohs to take care of business and at least win the series, if not sweep, this weekend series at Seattle. And, guys, we're coming up final half hour of the Rap Game with RP3. Are you sad? Is it bittersweet?
Oh,
or are you like, really, we got to put up with these two guys again next week just with a different show name?
I forgot to mention, Raymond, shame on me because you even told me to do it and I didn't do it. We talked LSU baseball and RPOs there. They're live on 103.7 The Game tonight. 6 o'clock pregame, first pitch, 6:30.
No. That's right. But tonight, Bumper to Bumper Sports will be live from Rufino's on the River from 4 to 6:30. The Brother Ben Love, it's the perfect place to enjoy life on the river. Take in the Linden menu and watch Ben and Ruffin Rodriguez live out there. They'll lead you up to LSU baseball tonight. When we come back, we'll talk with Tyler Nunez, Tiger Ag, right here on the Rap Game with RP3. Breaking news here at the 103.7 The Game studios. Tiger Rag contributor, basketball and football writer, Tyler Nunez, has announced that he is, in fact, declaring for the NBA draft. He joins five other LSU Tiger players for declaring for the draft. Tyler has no collegiate basketball experience, yet he is still declared for the NBA draft because that is what everyone else is doing. In a quote from his Instagram account, Tyler Nunez says, "It just seems like the right thing to do." End quote.
Hashtag forever LSU.
Hashtag forever LSU. Let's head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest who's just made that announcement. It's the one and only Tyler Nunez.
Hey, man, everyone's going. I got to follow him somewhere, right? I've been covering him for a year. I can't just let him leave.
Tyler. Let's start off there, man, because I find it amusing that a lot of diehard LSU fans are being Chicken Little right now. I talked about it earlier on the show, and that just everyone just needs to calm down about all these cats declaring for the draft, because since the rule changed 3 years ago, you can go through the combine. Hell, you can even hire an agent as long as you part ways with that agent. In the 10 days after the draft combine, you can go back to school.
Correct.
So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think LSU fans are just nervous because of everything else going on with Will Wade that they think there now there's going to be this mass exodus of players?
Yeah, LSU is in a weird position right now, and I understand the trepidation from fans and the frustration. I've had a lot of curse words in my Twitter mentions these last couple of days. The good news is LSU and Will Wade are meeting today, so that might help mitigate some of that. We don't know what's going to come of that. It could be anything from he's fired later today to they're going to try to take steps forward to reinstating him. So we're waiting on that, but it looks like they're going to try to reinstate him. So if that happens, I think there's a good chance that a lot of these guys come back. Javonte Smart and Emmett Williams are not NBA ready by any stretch of the imagination. Both of those guys are really talented and they have a high ceiling, but it's just they're just not there yet. I think that Naz Reid and Tremont Waters are probably gone regardless. But yeah, these guys can all come back. In addition to this, I think a lot of people are worried about the recruiting class, right? The late signing period starts less than a week from now. It starts next Thursday. One of the biggest fishes that they're trying to grab, Trenton Watford, is expected to sign on April 20th. So there's a lot going on and a lot can go wrong, but if they're able to rectify this thing with Will Wade, it could turn around in a quick fashion. But note that the NCAA will be in their meeting today. So the key term once again for LSU will be institutional control. And how this plays out is going to play a big factor on whether or not these guys come back.
We're on with Tyler Nunez from Tiger Rag. Tyler, could it just also be a thing here? This is such a tight-knit group. They really mm-hmm. gelled together as a team following the death of Wade Sims. Could it just be also that they just want to go through this process together and they want to go to the NBA draft combine still as teammates and experience it all as a team? Could that be playing a role in that as well with them declaring?
Some of them, yeah. I don't think all of them are going to get invited to the draft combine personally. I think that Tremont Waters and Naz Reid are a lock. After that, I'm not really sure who gets invited. I don't watch the NBA draft combine a lot, so I don't know what the scope of it is, but I'd imagine that there's definitely a cutoff somewhere, and a few of those guys are probably going to be under it. I think going through the process together, the going through team meetings and texting each other about coaches and stuff, I think that's probably something. Honestly, I think it's just the smartest move to keep all their options open, in my opinion. I think that with the rule that they're able to come back, I think that the ability to kind of test the waters while this Will Wade situation kind of plays out, especially with the trial upcoming on beginning April 22nd, I think that this gives them a lot of time. It gives them a month and a half to kind of see where LSU will be by come May 25th. And then they can make whatever decision is best for them, whether that be to stay in the NBA draft pool and try to make it into the G League or go play in Europe, or whether it's be to come back and play, or a third option, they could come back and end up the transfer portal immediately. So, I think that this is just kind of the smartest thing for them to do as far as kind of seeing how LSU handles the situation and what comes of it.
Tyler, Skylar Mays was kind of surprising when he made his announcement. I actually think he has the skill set to play at the next level in some capacity. But we also know that he's an academic superstar, has a 4.1 GPA, and is studying medicine. What's the likelihood that he does come back, if you had to put a percentage on it, of him returning for his senior season?
I don't know. For him, I'm at like 50-50, because like I think that he probably just had the best season he's going to have as a Tiger, if I had to imagine, with the players that he had around him. His draft stock's probably not going to be higher. He's not going to get drafted. I think he's going to have to, if he's going to go to the NBA, he's going to have to do the undrafted free agent, two-way contract route, kind of like we're seeing with Brandon Sampson right now. But I do think that he does have potential to be a good defensive role player. I think there's a lot of teams on the NBA, in the NBA, who could use a guy like him in some capacity. And I do think he's sneakily athletic, and I think he has more potential than a lot of people give him. That said, it depends on how badly he wants to play in the NBA, right? If he wants to go through that process, and if he thinks it's worth delaying his med school dreams, then that's all up to him. But I do think that he does have an opportunity if he's able to kind of land in the right spot and prove what he can do.
We're talking to Tiger Rag's own Tyler Nunez. Tyler, there's been some reports that don't expect something to happen today with the Will Wade talking to LSU for the first time in over a month. This could very well be take as long or even longer than what the Javonte Smart situation was when they held him out for a quote-unquote abundance of caution. Why do you think it's going to take so long? Because there's a lot of things that have to be hashed out. But what do you think Will Wade's going to have to do or tell them? What is the NCAA and LSU wanting from Will Wade in this process to have him become reinstated, do you think?
That's a complicated question with a multitude of potential answers. It's there's so, like you said, there's so many factors here. I think they want assurance that, that they're not going to get pounded for this, for what he potentially did. I think they want a little bit of clarification on what that phone call was about concerning Javonte Smart and his recruitment. They probably want to know who he was talking to, although I think that that has come out in that has come out in reports, but they probably want confirmation of that. I think really they, what LSU wants to do is just prove to the NCAA that they're in control of the situation. Like I said, it comes down to this institutional control, and they want to get as much out of Will Wade as possible without implicating themselves. And I think that's their main goal here. If they want to keep him as their head coach, they obviously want him to keep some of some things tight-lipped. But this is going to be a week-long process, from what I understand. This isn't going to get hashed out in one meeting. This is going to be a long. A long, arduous process, and then on top of that, they have to see if he's even going to be able, if he's going to have to testify at this upcoming trial. So, they're hoping he doesn't, I'm sure. But even if he doesn't, there's still some stuff that could theoretically come out, considering Christian Dawkins' involvement in the case. So, it's all a mess. There's a lot of moving parts. I'm not exactly sure what LSU is trying to get out of this. I thought they were going to fire him as soon as the season was over. Now it seems they want to try to keep him on board. What exactly they need to keep him on board, I'm not 100% sure, but it's definitely a complicated situation.
Tyler, do you feel also, and I know this is, I don't want you to speculate here, but I just want you kind of your gut instinct. It also kind of maybe comes off as that these guys declaring for the draft is also kind of a way of them asking the administration to, hey, get it together. We need to know who our coach is, whether it's going to be Will Wade or not. There just needs some action needs to be. We're tired of y'all sitting on your hands. Do you think that's part of the process as well, thought process?
I don't know if that's necessarily exactly like what they're trying to do, but it's, I think it's definitely a side effect regardless. So just from a consequentialist standpoint, I think that it's definitely putting pressure on this administration to make something happen. And I think, this is something I've been saying since the season ended, that whether they fired him or wanted to keep him, I thought they needed to make a statement one way or the other. And they still haven't, and we're still kind of sitting in limbo waiting for something to happen. And I think that these players are probably tired of that. And it's kind of, I think rather than them trying to force their hand, I think that they forced the athlete's hand. I think they don't have much of an option but to kind of test the waters and see what happens. And like I said, I think it's the smartest options for these players to take, considering that it'll give them a month and a half to A, get some really good coaching, get some good feedback on their game, and B, to kind of wait and see what happens here.
Tyler, let's switch over from hoops to football. We're less than two weeks away from the NFL draft, 2 weeks actually yesterday. In your estimation, we know that Greedy and Devin are going to be first-round draft picks, or they're at least projected to be first-round draft picks. Devin's projected to be maybe even the top five, definitely top 10. How do you think? Do you think we're going to see two Tigers taken on Thursday, and how many of these guys, like Ed Alexander and others, do you think are going to be drafted?
Greedy Williams has kind of moved up and down the mock draft chart a lot. I know he's going up to New York, which is, you'd hope it's a good sign, but guys have gone up there and not gotten drafted before. So, that's just one of those things. I do think that Greedy Williams probably does go in the first round. He's probably not going to be the first or maybe not even the second cornerback taken, but I do think that he's a talented enough guy, and cornerback is enough of a need in the NFL that somebody's going to take a chance on him. And the bad news is it's not the top 10 pick that he wanted, but the good news is he'll probably end up at a much better football team, and he'll be able to compete immediately. So, I mean, you kind of give and take with stuff like that. As for how many people get drafted, I need to look at some more guys, but there's definitely a few guys out there that you mentioned. Ed Alexander, you got a tight end in there that's made waves since the beginning of this. You got a few guys. I'd say probably five guys, maybe. Okay. I don't know. That's just an estimate based on very little research. I've been mostly focusing on the first round, and then basketball season just ended. But they've got guys for sure. And this is a very talented LSU group that's left. I'm mostly excited to see where Devin White goes. I think a lot of people have him going to Tampa Bay, which would break my heart as a Saints fan. But I think that these two guys that are going up to New York in these next couple weeks, they're two really talented guys that have a really high ceiling.
Well, Tyler, we appreciate you making some time for us as always, brother. And I hope that you go through this draft process and you decide to come back to Tiger Rag. I know the fellows over there would appreciate it if you did stay put and come back to school. So best of luck, though, to you, regardless.
Yeah, whenever I find an agent, you'll be the first to know. I just got to find an agent that's willing to take me on. It's been more of a challenge than I thought it would be.
Tyler, brother, enjoy your weekend, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, have a good one, man.
Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag.
I'm going to throw my hat in the ring.
I mean, hell, I might as well just post, too. I've declared for the NBA draft.
There you go. You declare for the NBA draft. I'll be your agent.
I wonder if the fact that I was back-to-back intramural champions at my high school for my basketball team, I also led the league in fouls.
I have played exactly, precisely, with no question, 0 seconds of organized basketball in my life. Now pick up basketball. Hold on. Now, I'll be dunking on fools. Pick up basketball.
I can just see you on the court talking so much. You're that guy.
Oh, yeah.
You talk so much
and
trash.
Then, and another guy, I pull on your shirt as you go by me.
Oh.
And then they're like, whoa, whoa. And I'm like, I didn't touch you. What are you talking about, man? Quit complaining.
You're the guy
quit
I want on my team.
Yeah, quit complaining. What are you whining about over there? Play ball. And check.
And I man the post, and I foul anyone that comes near me.
Oh, see, we would win 2-on-2 then.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
we'd be the guys that no one would want to play.
They would quit every night. Oh, no, not those guys. Not RP3 and company, no.
When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we're going to wrap things up right here on 103.7 The Game. Friends, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. Look, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or your contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you and your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and look, man, it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. So call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Just a reminder that today, the good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, we'll be live from Murfino's on the River from 4 to 6:30. He's going to lead you up to LSU Baseball, who begins their 3-game series at Mizzou. So Ben will be at live from Murfino's on the River from 4 to 6:30. And it's the perfect place to enjoy life on the river, take in their Lenten menu, and watch Ben and LSU legend Ruffin Rodri live. So make sure to check that out this afternoon.
I mean, I don't live in the area, so I guess me saying, like, I've been to Ruffino's, you got to go. If you live here, you had to have been to Ruffino's. If you haven't, what are you doing? You got to get there.
It was such a good experience. The good brother Ben Love recommended it to me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
We went out for a celebration, took out the wife for a date night. We went to Ruffino's.
Right.
It was such an awesome experience. I actually called the next day to compliment the manager about the service that we received and the food.
My experience at Ruffino's,
I am a tough critic. Just like
my experience at Ruffino's was incredible as well. I actually got a Christmas present from a friend of the station, has a show on the station, Craig Perks. He gave me a Christmas present 1 year. It was a gift card to Ruffino's, absolutely delicious. When we went, they were doing some kind of special. We took a picture in front of something me and Kaylee did. I forget what the advertisement, but it was something. We took a picture of something, and they gave us a free, like, blueberry martini for taking a picture with, just taking a picture. So I was like, yes, please, I'll take a free drink for that. And since we're talking about restaurants real quick, just I want to pour one out to an unnamed restaurant in Baton Rouge that has closed down, not necessarily recently. It's been a little while since it's closed, but you sparked my memory because you called and complimented Ruffino's on their great service and stuff like that.
Correct.
I did a similar thing for a restaurant in Baton Rouge that is now closed. I called and was like, hey, I want to make reservations. It was me and Kaylee's, I think, one-year anniversary or something. And they went above and beyond, hooked me up with like a corner booth in a very private area. There were roses on the table, dog. There was a bottle of wine in some like ice.
I felt like a baller. You're going to stop right now because I can speak for all the other men in Acadiana that are listening to the show that you just made all of us look bad.
I dreamed that. It was all a dream. It didn't actually happen.
I can speak to all the guys right now running parts going, listen to this guy. I'm trying to just take my wife out to a nice dinner, and this guy's talking about he went to a restaurant where there was roses on the table and all this other mess. You just got a bunch of guys in trouble, Cody. Congratulations. Hey, way to end the show strong.
Could you think of any other way for Rap Game with RP3 to end than me derailing things and making things worse for everyone?
It has been terrific. Given the opportunity to have my own show here on 103.7 The Game, and now to have the opportunity to have a morning show early in the morning, continue working with you, Cody, and the rest of the gang here at 103.7 The Game. I'm stoked. I'm excited about RP3 and Company debuting next week.
It'll be fun, man.
And we're going to do all the cool stuff that we did with this show and just build upon that, yep. And hopefully everyone out there will love it. I'm sure if you don't, you will let me know on Twitter.
There should be only additions to the show, no subtractions.
That's right. Tremendous week in the books. Y'all be safe out there this weekend. Weather's supposed to be bad on Saturday. Y'all stay safe, and we will talk to you on Monday with the debut episode of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.